Open your eyes. Wake up, Link.
I'm Luke Summerhayes.
I'm James J. Moyles.
Na mercy.
And you're listening to Hyrule Field Report. And, Jay, what are we up to this week?
This week, we're, I suppose, continuing our little jaunt into Studio Ghibli with, well, we covered Laputa on a previous episode. This time, and it'll be quite loose Zelda connections for this one. I think we had ideas that it would be, there would be firmer connections before we set out to watch this. But this time, we're going to be covering Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind.
My idea was that, like, the world of Tears of the Kingdom is basically Princess Mononoke at ground level, Laputa in the sky, and Nausicaa in the depths. Which aesthetically I think is a little true, but the connection to the other two is much stronger than the connection to this one, it turns
100%,
out.
Yeah. I mean, I've not seen Mononoke, but...
Like, ever?
Never, no, no.
Oh. Wow, that surprises me. It's coming up on Films and Filth, so we're going to get you and Mercy in and we'll call it a crossover episode.
Sweet, I'll be up for that. Yeah, I mean, it's I'm very, very, very lucky that pretty much every Studio Ghibli film is on UK Netflix, so, you know, it's not hard to get hold of them in various quality. Wish.
Here we're purchasing legitimate DVDs to watch
of course,
all of these, obviously.
Of course, yeah, absolutely, exactly. Absolutely.
And then, you know, backing them up just for security
just
purposes.
Yeah, of course. Right. But yeah, Mononoke is one that I've definitely, like, even just from seeing, like, the thumbnail on Netflix, I'm like, oh yeah, that's Breath of the Wild. It's not.
Yeah. Well,
not shy in its inspirations, old Zelda.
I had seen it as a kid, but then me and Mercy watched it again semi-recently. And I had the same thought of you, of just like, oh yeah, the art style is inspired by Zelda. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, this is a lot of inspiration for Zelda.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another game that I think Nausicaa's far more heavily inspires, but we'll maybe get to that as we go through a bit of a chat about the film and the characters and what happens.
Yeah. So this one is... Well, actually, one thing we should quickly touch on. Technically not a Studio Ghibli film.
Is it not?
This film predates the forming of Studio Ghibli.
Exactly.
Ghibli was basically built on the back of this film.
I see. It is Miyazaki, though, right?
Yes, he not only is it written and directed by him, he actually created the manga it's based on.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay. That answers some questions that I'll have as we kind of talk about final thoughts, that there's a actual source material based on this, because, yeah, there was... It felt abridged, maybe? Is that the right word to say? It definitely felt there were some things missing in the film adaptation.
It still works.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, oh wow, there's deep lore here. But yeah, I could see what you mean, that like they bring things up and you're like, is that, am I expected to know what that is?
Yeah.
So, Mercy, what's your history with this one? As well, the big Ghibli fan of the three of us.
I'm just a big fan. what do you mean my history?
Like, when did you first see this one and stuff?
So, I think when I started to get into Ghibli, this one wasn't as big as Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away. So I saw it because I was getting into Ghibli.
Right.
And I was getting into the anime film genre, right? Like the then again, I also was like such a pretentious little girl.
Right.
And I was like, Ghibli's not anime, because anime is like, this is beyond anime, you know?
Yeah.
I kept talking using that kind of language, like separating them from other, like, lesser anime, because this is too good. which is, you know, a little bit unfair to say.
Yeah.
Very unfair to say. But when I saw Nausicaa, I was like, okay, so I see, this is early work. This is early Miyazaki work. And you can see the intense how can I say this? The lore is very heavy. So it's an incredibly lore heavy movie. And usually when you compare Miyazaki's work after that, it's like he's just
Yeah, there's quite a few things in this one. Mm-hmm. Well, like you just said, like it's pretentious to say Ghibli is separate from anime.
Right.
This film in particular feels more like other anime than a lot of Ghibli stuff does.
Yes.
Both in terms of the animation
and
like the main character is a little more of an action hero who wields weapons and does fighting.
Mm-hmm.
She absolutely rules.
Oh yeah, I love Nausicaa.
Yeah.
And it is a little more traditional in structure and has more like quite logical. Whereas by the time you get to like his most recent film, it's very the kind of fantasy he makes isn't about strict rules that make sense.
No, exactly. It's just very evocative.
It's evocative and metaphor, yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, I enjoy both of his works, especially the latest one. The Boy and the Heron. That was a completely different experience. And like watching Nausicaa again, for me was like, I see. So this is like another, this is Miyazaki at his like mangaka era, I guess. Like, I read, so I have a collection of essays of him. And oh man, I wish I could have brought them here to Japan. But basically he's just like, I don't really remember like, I cannot quote, you know, what he said because I don't really remember what he was saying about it. But he was just like, you know, I just wanted to make a story about, you know, like a good story. Just wanted to make a story. And it goes into depth about how he developed the manga and everything. And it was serialized, I think. I'm just talking out of my ass at this point. I'm sorry. I shouldn't curse.
It's okay. We curse on this one.
Oh, okay, fine.
I mean, you know, please don't go crazy with it, but yeah. Jay,
do any of these, I'm sorry.
Do you know who else worked on this one?
I do. So I was actually, there was a specific point I was going to bring this up because... We'll come to that point. But yes, there was a moment where we were sitting there going, is this? And then I Googled. So yeah, we'll come to that though.
The film opens with our main character, Nausicaa. I'm not used to the Ghibli films, just literally the main character's name being the title like that. So I thought Nausicaa was going to be the name of the valley.
I see.
But I thought Nausicaa that as well.
Of the Valley of the Wind.
That's true.
And Nausicaa is literally the titular princess.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So... if I remember rightly, we don't see Nausicaa initially. We see, and this is where I really should have written down characters' names.
Yupa.
Yes, thank you, Yupa. Mm-hmm. We see
Lord Yupa.
Lord Yupa, Yupa-sama. Mm-hmm. He's kind of exploring what we know as, well, what we find out is like the Sea of Decay. And like he's got like he's got wearing a mask to avoid inhaling spores and fumes and... like you see these like rotting but still kind of beautiful looking like plant growth and fungal growth, and you see a building that's very much been taken over by nature and this kind of decaying, rotting sort of vegetation. And then inside, he goes into a house and he finds like the husk, the decaying husk of a human. So it's a very, it immediately kind of sets the tone, like this is a world that's there, it's not a very nice place to live if you're near the Sea of Decay by any means.
Absolutely not. It's a very precarious world. It's one of the stories. It's one of the movies that give me the most anxiety. It's one of them, including zombie movies. And this could be technically because of the whole like virus thing.
Yeah, it's. I guess it kind of spreads in that way.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, we have our first two like big video game references. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the other way around, the video games are referencing this.
Yeah.
Because he's riding a chocobo.
Yes. One of my first notes was, look at that chocobo-ass bird.
Yeah. Oh, so this movie predates the chocobos?
Chocobos come from 88, yeah. So
oh, shit.
Pretty clearly based on this.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh. Yeah, when I saw it too, I was like, oh, that's a chocobo. But because I don't know my game history. So for me, it's like, well, they look alike, but I don't know what, you know, mm-hmm. which came first.
But like,
it's interesting to hear your perspective on this, you gamer boys.
It's like you could maybe try and get away with it saying, oh, it's just a big bird, but then you see the kind of like crest, like the head plumage and how it's all kind of spiky. Like that's absolutely a chocobo for Infra. So yeah. Yeah. Square borrowed heavily from that for sure for them birds.
Mm-hmm. And then the Sea of Decay itself. Mm-hmm. There's sort of this big, like you say, like a forest of rot with like a lot of mushrooms and weird, unusual plants. Mm-hmm. The two most specific things it reminds me of.
I'm going to see if you've written down what I've written down here, but on you go.
The two I've got in my head are Caelid from Elden Ring.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Coral Highlands from Monster Hunter World.
Oh, I had the Rotten Veil, but I guess that's kind of linked, right?
Hmm.
Because that's the Rotten Vale's underneath the Coral Highlands. Is that not how it works in Monster Hunter World?
Yeah.
Because Coral Highlands is still quite nice. Is kind of...
Well, the Sea of Rot is, like you said, it is quite beautiful.
Yeah.
It's deadly, but it doesn't look like that unpleasant.
Yeah.
And the thing I remember thinking when I saw the Coral Highlands was like, wow, how unique this world that looks like an underwater world, but it's actually ground level.
Mm-hmm.
And it even has those big sort of many-winged dragonfly bug things, which are really
exactly.
Key aesthetic here.
I thought those were in the Rotten Vale, but you're absolutely right. They're actually above in the Coral Highlands, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Caelid, like, as soon as I saw like the vegetation, like there's a part in, I don't know if you remember the big sort of rotting swamp in the middle of Caelid that Miyazaki, not that one, Hidetaka, not Hayao, FromSoft Miyazaki, this is going to get confusing, FromSoft for Miyazaki, he loves a good poison swamp, so yeah, but in the middle of that swamp there's the kind of, is it, they call it the Scarlet Bloom, something to do with Melania, like that's where she got General Radahn and caused all this to happen. And I'm replaying Elden Ring right now, and as soon as I saw this, I was like, Miyazaki has a lot to answer for. He's been borrowing very heavily from Miyazaki. And even more so later, we'll get to that later in the film, but yeah.
You're right, it's after we see him, then we cut to Nausicaa, who's gliding around on her little glider. And she finds a big shed shell of an om.
Yes, and they have the sickest music, honestly. The theme song of the om seems always like, oh, yes. I feel so whimsical when I hear it. It's like, it's great.
Yeah, these big, like...
insect creatures.
Insect things, I'm trying to just think what...
Kind of like a pill bug, but... And... like massive.
The pill bug the size sharper, of a mole.
Yes.
Right? Pill bugs are cute and you can grab them and join them into balls and play with them. But you cannot do that with an om because it's too big.
They'll do that to you.
And
also, they're sentient.
Yes.
Yes.
Very important thing to mention. Bugs are sentient in this universe.
Well, the om seem to be like individually sentient.
Yes.
The other bugs are more sentient in the way an ant colony is.
Yes.
Are you,
This isn't a live one at this stage, just a big shell.
The Oms are a very interesting creature to me because you don't see that, you don't see them that often in Miyazaki's work, especially a bug, right? Oh, no, that's not true. I'm going to take it back. He uses critters a lot.
He uses critters a lot, but does he often use bugs? It's more like little animal friends.
Well, sometimes. It just I was reminded immediately of like the little short that is in Mitaka's museum.
Mm.
Because okay, a little context. In the Ghibli Museum in Mitaka, they play one short a month, and you can only see that short in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're very exclusive. So you have to come to Japan to see them. And there is one short about a spider, about a water spider.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's it. So that's why I was like, no, he has used it before, but I don't know if he directed it, though. I don't even know if he was involved in the shorts.
Also, yeah, if you're saying, like,
so, who
he
knows?
Doesn't use bugs that much, apart from this one short that they play one month.
Shut up.
You have to fly to Japan.
But you know how he sometimes gets involved in that kind of, like, kind of little passion projects, so. But, I mean, I guess the Om itself, like a creature like that, I don't think you see creatures like that in Miyazaki's work generally, right?
In media generally, and that's one of this film's points, right, is the bugs are gross and scary and different,
mm-hmm.
But they're not, you shouldn't treat them as monsters.
Exactly. And they're just chilling.
But yeah, so this one is just a shell and it's pretty much indestructible.
Yes.
She has to use like gunpowder and dig it out with a knife just to take off this like eyelid or whatever you would call it.
I really, yeah, the eye, yeah.
Mm.
I really love that sequence.
Yeah, me too. Right? Like the whole, the way she like peeled it, like used the gunpowder to take it off. Like, I don't know why, it just, it felt very, like intrepid of her, like thinking outside the box. And it wasn't just, it was a very unique bit of like, designed to get this eye out of the shell. Like, it wasn't just, she's going to pry it off with a big stick, like,
right?
I guess it showed her kind of resourcefulness. That's maybe the best way to put it.
And,
so, really nice way of exemplifying that.
And I think one of the reasons why I like it that much is because it gives me so much information about the universe that we're in. It's Nausicaa explaining to us that this world is dangerous, that the Oms exist, that there are giant bugs, that there are, if she takes off her mask, she dies. Mm-hmm. That, but there's so much beauty in that world, right? And that just frames her character so beautifully. And that's something that I mentioned, Luke, is that she almost, like, she kept her tone voice the entire movie.
Mm.
Of course, she was, like, you know, up and down because she was, like, I don't know, shot at or something. Sorry, spoilers. But she keeps that voice the entire movie. She's, like, so royal and composed. And I love that. I love that for her.
But then, yes, we cut back to... She sees Lord Yupa again. And him and his little chocobo friends are on the run from an Om on the rampage. And again, we see sort of her resourcefulness and her connection to nature as Nausicaa distracts it and sends it back to the forest and calms it down. And basically saves his life.
A little bit of... if we're bringing this back around to Zelda, the hill kind of... blue color, the serene, then the red alert for the eyes, big guardian vibes.
Yeah.
I thought that was really video game like.
Mm.
The whole my eyes are red
color-coded
when I'm angry. So you know that I'm angry.
Jay, I assume you watched Japanese with subs and not the 2005 Disney dub.
Correct, because and I'm glad I did, because I typically do watch anime in subbed anyway, but I think with Ghibli films as well, like, I really want to be, you know, immersed in the world and the story that they're telling. And I think unless they're doing like a really unique voice acting performance, something like you might have seen the clips of Robert Pattinson in The Boy and the Heron, like, doesn't sound like Robert Pattinson at all. It sounds like he's, you know,
yeah, he sounds a lot like a Japanese voice.
Yeah, yeah, he does a really good job. But then I was reading the cast and the credits that came up for who's in who's in the dub of this. And like, Patrick Stewart is Yupa? I'm like, no, I can't. I would have heard Picard and instantly been taken out of the dub.
I would kind of like to watch it someday in English because obviously I love Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, but...
But yeah, you're actually my first watch. I would have spent...
Yeah.
I would have spent the whole film just hearing Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, and like, there's a character later on, that, again, name's terrible. It's the boy that
I've got the list in front of me. So Asbel, I assume, is who you're talking about.
Correct.
Because he's played by Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Mark Hamill's in it again, but he's in a lot of Ghibli films.
Mark Hamill actually is like an incredible,
and he
has
a voice actor. Yeah, so
where is Mark Hamill in all of this? Wait, is he playing somebody?
Think he plays.
He's here. Go down. There he is. Who is he?
Plays like a mayor.
The mayor of Pejite.
Yeah. Oh, he's only briefly in it towards the end.
So yeah, small role for him, but like, obviously Patrick Stewart, Shia LaBeouf, I would have been taken out of the film quite heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
Uma Thurman.
Oh shit, she was
Kushana. Oh, was she Kushana? Yeah. Okay.
Honestly, okay. So we saw the movie. We saw the dub at school.
Mm.
And honestly, I did enjoy Lo Yupa's voice.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I didn't mind him. I didn't know Shia LaBeouf was in it, though. Yeah. Who's Nausicaa?
I haven't heard of that actress.
Oh, so she's an actual actress. Like
Probably an actual voice actress.
Yeah, there you go. Like an actual voice actress.
Alison Lohman.
Well, like, I did enjoy it. The kids, of course.
I mean, she's so not famous that Nausicaa comes up on the opening paragraph of Wikipedia.
Really?
So, yeah.
I see. And I was telling Luke that, so when Ghibli was introduced to the States, he was introduced by Disney, right?
Mm-hmm.
And specifically by this man who, disclaimer, he is a piece of shit.
Oh, I know it. Yeah,
by Mr. Lasseter. And I know that, of course, because they wanted people to see the movies, they have to invite this kind of voice actor, right? Like, actual actors. Like, and freaking Patrick, what's his name?
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart is going to be Lord Yupa. Wow, he's here in this movie. Come watch it. And all of the editions, like all of the special editions of the movies, they would always have like a little... how do you say, introduction by John Lasseter.
Mm.
And all of the editions that I have back home, they're like that. So I would see John. I was really familiar with his face.
So,
I thought
do you
it was,
think people actually go and see animated films because they have famous actors in them?
Who?
Do you think people, like real people, give like care?
Yes.
Do you think they're like, oh, I'm going to go see this animated film because The Rock does a voice?
Yes.
You reckon?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like, oh, I don't know, my son wants to watch it, and I don't want to watch it, but oh, the Rock is there, so I guess, like, you know, why not?
I feel like most people, when they watch an animated film, aren't even thinking about who's doing the voice.
I think for a Ghibli film, these days especially, like, the brand of the studio is going to be that's the draw, right?
Exactly.
And I guess that's why there was a lot of big names in the kind of Disney dubs that they did, because they thought, people aren't going to be aware of Studio Ghibli, so let's throw in, you know, big names, your Christian Bales, your Patrick Stewart's, your Shia LaBeouf's. I thought it was, just going back to who brought it across, I thought it was Harvey Weinstein that was involved in it.
No, most of the Pokemon movies have Weinstein's name at the start.
Oh my god.
But there was like an earlier... like 1988 American dub by Manson.
Yeah, apparently, it was Weinstein, and apparently, Miyazaki went to meet him apparently, and they were trying to get lots of demands for cuts, and then Miyazaki said he just smiled and said, "I defeated him." So.
King.
God, he's just so powerful.
Yeah.
He's just so powerful. Just a little comment that I want to make about Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a little clip of him going to the museum,
mm-hmm.
to the Ghibli Museum, and he was so chill, man. He was just, hey guys, oh, I'm so sorry.
Vida.
Oh, sorry.
She just spilled coffee on her own bed.
It's all right, I have to clean it anyway. He was like, hey guys, can I just get a coffee? And he was like, yes, of course. And everybody was around him. He's just like, I just want to get a cup of coffee. Leave me alone. He's just a dude.
He seems like someone who has no interest in being famous.
No.
I was probably quite annoyed that he is.
Yeah. He's just trying to do his best, but... Mm.
So
what a man, what a character.
Speaking of like the cast and credits, the opening credits where we see like the tapestries that are hinting at things that are happening in the world.
Oh hell yeah, yes.
For me, this was probably in terms of like the whole film, like the most kind of overt reminder I had of Zelda and Tears of the Kingdom, because those tapestries are absolutely Tears of the Kingdom, you could probably say, might have drawn inspiration for that, for the design of the murals.
Or Breath of the Wild, maybe even.
Mm. Even so. The murals of like the imprisoning war.
That we've seen, yeah. They do have some more like stone murals as well.
Yeah.
But also, I think even older Zelda, like Wind Waker did it with like some stained glass windows and stuff.
That's right.
I think a lot of Japanese fantasy stuff has kind of copied this little technique.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
He does it again. Well, he doesn't do like the tapestries, but he does like something that looks like that on Castle in the Sky.
Mm.
For the opening sequence. Yeah, he animates it. He animates that one, but like he gives you the entire background of why everything is like that at the beginning. But the tapestries, they really do reminded me of Zelda specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Prince of Egypt. A little bit.
And then now we're in the Valley of the Wind.
Yes.
Mm. Which, that's its only name. They don't think they ever gave it like a proper noun name. It's just called the Valley of the Wind.
It's the Valley of the Wind, yeah.
Which is, you know, your JRPG Zelda starting town.
Starting village,
peaceful little village.
Yep.
Grass. Nice breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone worships Nausicaa like a hero here.
Mostly full of old people and kids. So like the protagonist can shine through as, you know.
Yep. The only young, vibrant one.
That's right.
She does everything in that town.
Yeah.
Everything in that valley. She's like, hey, princess, can you fix my clock? Yes, sir. Hey, princess, can you check this? Yes, ma'am. Hey, princess, can you give a name to my child? Yes, ma'am.
I think it's Yupa they get to name their child.
Oh, that's true. That's true. All right, but she wanted to be named, like...
She wanted a strong name like Nausicaa.
Sorry. Okay, whatever. Okay, Nausicaa didn't do that, but she would do everything else.
Yeah.
But I mean, because she was, like, the leader, right?
Yeah, and like the king's sick in bed.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this is where like, so early Mario and Zelda, the princess was literally just there to sort of be kidnapped.
Mm.
But in later versions, it is like the princess rules the kingdom. So I wonder if even that a little bit is inspired by this. Because a lot of the time Peach or Zelda are shown ruling their kingdom without a king or anyone in the picture.
Every chance.
Do you guys... Huh?
He was just agreeing.
Oh, sorry. Do you guys think that maybe Nausicaa as a character, I mean, as a woman character being strong and independent and whatever, do you think it like pushed, like, how do you say? It's kind of woke.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of woke.
Damn woke agenda.
Exactly.
Ruining...
Woke agenda ruining anime again.
Ruining Ghibli, even though this is the first film.
I mean,
but do you,
if anyone gets annoyed at sees this as woke or, you know, and frowns upon it, then honestly, get a life. Like, she's awesome in this film. Like,
oh yeah, she is.
Like, just
I
in
actually
terms of, anyway.
Kind of, Ghibli kind of goes in the reverse direction, because in this film, she's the main character and very competent. The very next film, Laputa, the sort of princess character, has a boy who follows her around and helps her.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, she's not like the...
And like when we get the other lead character in this, it's almost like a subversion of that trope, even though this is his first film. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Even the main villain we'll meet soon, you know, a strong, scary lady as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
I suppose the only other character of note other than Yupa and Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind is the oldest woman alive. What, is it Obaba? Or is that just the...
Yeah. Yubaba is the one from Spirited Away.
Yes. And I guess just because she's this old crone lady that's talking about like an ancient legend, like, and I was, you know, looking for Zelda
she's
ties.
She's so metal, though. Kill me! Do it!
You were thinking Impa.
I'm thinking Impa, yeah. It's like she's even speaking about like the lore of the land and this ancient prophecy and all that, yeah. Right? She's talking about a hero that will kind of stop the Sea of Rot from advancing or something along those lines. I can't remember the exact words of the prophecy they say at the start of the film. I've slept since then.
I don't know how new the trope is at this point in history, like in 84. I don't know if there's been like other like characters like that before, but JoJo has one.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Oh, I mean, this character is as old as like human language.
Really?
Yeah, there's always been an old crone who sets legends. Macbeth starts with one. Macbeth starts with a character like this.
Oh!
The Bible has characters like this.
What do you mean Miyazaki hasn't embedded every single trope in
the Yeah.
Even just like specifically in her design, like if Impa was blind, if Impa was blind, I would say this is 100% an homage.
Yeah, they gotta be blind because the future is blinding.
I may be skipping ahead slightly here because there's a little more village hijinks. But then the next thing that happens is a great big skyship crashes.
That's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like one of the things I was really paying attention to here, and I think it's because I've been going on a bit of a Toriyama kick since this passing, sadly. And I really, really love, I don't know what it is, but Toriyama's like vehicle designs always like are really, really cool. So as soon as this big plane came on, and I know Ghibli's always been great with aircraft, right?
Miyazaki's obsessed with planes.
He loves planes. Cannot
stand out. Yeah, he has to do a little plane design.
And like, I guess just, I'm sure I noticed it in Laputa, but I was hyper aware of it this time. I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's a cool ship, cool airship. Let me see many of them.
Laputa, like, was very much about like it's the castle in the sky, right? And it's full of airships.
Yeah,
whereas this one, they just kind of show up because he likes planes.
Yeah, they're just there. He's not the main, right?
I'm about it.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? Let's just put a plane in here, like a cool plane. Yeah, let's do it. And just wait until you see Porco Rosso. That's a love letter.
Yes.
To machinery.
Yes, anyway, I've heard as much. Yes.
It's really good.
But in this one, as the plane's crashing, it's swarmed by bugs, and the occupants are trying to fight them off, shooting at them. This was a really interesting blink and you'll miss it line, where Nausicaa's like, how dare they?
Yeah.
Like, in her eyes, like, it's some great sin to, like, hurt one of the bugs, even as they're bringing down your plane. And briefly through the window, she gets a little glimpse of a captured young girl. Plane crashes, big fire, drags the girl out. With her dying breath, she says that she's the princess of Pajit. And that the cargo of the plane must be destroyed.
And Nausicaa, at this point, wrongly assumes, oh yeah, it's all burned up, don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, she's like, it's okay, everything's burning.
Maybe, I suppose, like, reading into that. Yeah, check. Better double check. But yeah, maybe she's already seen that it hasn't, and she just wants to give her peace, right? Like, that's
possibly, that's something she would do.
But also, like, of course, she had to, okay, yes, it's burning, whatever. I need to check something else. I'm the princess. We need to, there's pressing matters.
I mean, she didn't know it was the indestructible egg of a super being.
Exactly.
So most cargo would not have survived that fire.
Always check. You never know if the cargo is an indestructible egg of a super being.
Exactly. You never know if there's a pulsing egg.
Grotesque looking egg as well. Horrible looking.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Veiny. It's too early to think of that.
It's actually very similar to the egg at the end of the other film we saw last weekend. In The First Omen.
Which egg?
That they pull out of her. Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
We went and saw The First Omen last weekend, and we had the theatre to ourselves.
Wow.
Mercy was freaking out.
I was freaking out. I kept being like, there's people.
There's someone behind us. I think I just saw someone walk in front of
us. Yeah, literally. I was like, somebody walk in front of us. And Luke was like, yeah, whatever. What a lack of fear of, you know, the lack of the fear of God.
Yeah.
What it does to you.
There was literally a bit where you saw like a glimpse of a demon and you just turned around, that's El Diablo, I don't fuck with that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I don't fuck with it. I really don't fuck with the devil. I don't. I can't. I'm a Catholic. I have Catholic upbringing. What do you want me to say? I don't fuck with the devil. And talking about the devil.
The only, just a quick aside, the only time I've ever had the cinema to myself was for a decidedly less atmospheric film, which was J.J. Abrams' flop Super 8, if you've ever seen that.
I've seen Super 8.
What's Super 8?
It's meant to be like an homage to like Spielberg movies. So it's about like a group of young kids. Super 8 is the type of camera that people used to film movies on.
Oh.
And they're like little boys who want to make a movie, but then they meet an alien.
It's kind of cute.
It was fine. You know.
It's the definition of fine.
I see, it was fine. That's so cute.
Yeah, yes, the devil.
Speaking of the devil.
Speaking of the devil,
yeah,
that is the... So the people who were... You know, who were, like, taking care of that egg.
Mm.
Coming back to Nausicaa. Though these... Okay, so the villains are introduced after this.
Yes.
Right? They
the
are for
Tolmekians.
Me, yeah, the Tolmekians. They are, for me, the most human and the most, like... They make me desperate. Every time... What?
Nothing.
Every single time I see the movie, I'm like, you guys, I'm sorry, I'm gonna curse. I need you guys to fuck all the way off to Tomek. Whatever the fuck you came from. Yeah, Tomekia. Go back. Go back to your country. I become an American the second I see them.
They are very like they're just very believably written.
Exactly.
Military.
Yes.
Like
they just follow orders.
The ends justify their means for them, right? Like
exactly.
You know, and yeah.
They turn up, the soldiers immediately like storm the village,
mm-hmm.
kill the king,
yeah,
get their asses whooped by Nausicaa and Upa.
Upa just single, like, he is so fun to mm-hmm. watch.
Seeing Nausicaa just, because she goes into the, I guess, the castle this town, I wouldn't really describe it as a castle, it's like the biggest building, right? But and her dad, the king's been killed by the Tolmekians, and it causes her to fly into, you know, a rage. She doesn't just crumble and, you know,
mm-hmm.
and weep. She kicks some ass. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she basically wipes out their squadron.
Yeah.
Yeah, like with a stick. It's great.
Yep.
Like she has like a. Then she gets a sword off one of them and starts, you know, cutting them up. And
mm-hmm.
like some Arbored Knights come in, and I think Upa kind of jumps between her and the Arbored Knight, realizing, look, if you keep this up, they're gonna kill everyone.
Exactly.
And she kind of sees blood dripping from her sword and kind of snaps out of the bloodlust that she's in.
Interestingly, the bloodlust she's in is like a mirror of what the Om do.
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah, wow, yeah.
I mean, I only just thought of it then, but as you were describing it. But yeah, I think just like them, she's, when she's in a rage, she's blinded by it.
Mm.
I needed to be snapped out.
Which I suppose what kind of plays into a very formative part of her childhood, you'll speak about later.
Oh, yeah.
But now we meet our main human villain of the film. Like, I mean, I guess the big threat is the Sea of Decay.
Yes.
Mm.
But as the human face of the villain here is Princess Kushana.
Yes. Queen Shit.
A Tolmekian princess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not revealed yet, but we can talk about it anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So This is Melania.
So my notes for this is there's a scene later in the film where you find out she has prosthetic limbs.
Prosthetic limbs at that.
Golden prosthetic limbs.
And red hair.
And red hair, and she's very much tied with trying to defeat this sense of rot. I suppose Melania is a bit more complex because she's also the source of the rot, but in any case. Mm. My note says...
What game is this again?
Elden Ring.
Oh, okay, Elden Ring.
My notes say, after seeing Kishana's prosthetic limbs, it just block caps, Miyazaki, you must answer for your crimes.
What's again, the name of the character again?
From
Melania.
Melania.
M-A-L. There you go.
Melania.
Okay, that.
She's got a bit more Valkyrie inspirations, yeah. But yeah, like the prosthetic limbs. Like, and we're not done with the FromSoft Ghibli loving as well. There's one more that I'll note that I'm interested if you've noted as well. Look, but
yeah, that's her. I had to Google her, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
They literally just decided to let's grab this character.
Yeah.
From a character,
FromSoft games do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And from a characterization standpoint, she's different. She's very different. Like.
Mm.
Melania's whole thing is she's...
Melania's maybe more like Nausicaa, actually.
Ah.
To a point. Melania's whole thing is that she's, you know, very much... She's her brother's blade, right? Like, she's, like, his weapon. She'll do anything for him, and she'll march across the whole world to have a big showdown with the strongest demigod and all that nonsense. So, yeah. I think... Nausicaa's more independent than Melania. Mm. So I wouldn't really say they're alike. But in terms of visual design, she's Kishana.
Yes. So is it here that we learn what it was they were transporting? And what they're trying to do?
Yes. They're talking about the giant warrior.
We saw a little glimpse of them, I think, in the opening montage.
Yes.
We did.
Oh, the warriors who burned the earth for 7 days straight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I assumed when we first saw them, they were metaphorical.
Right.
It was just talking about the nuclear war.
Nope.
And, like, I didn't. They showed it.
I saw the scene of them and I thought, Attack on Titan is a lot to answer for.
Yes. Yeah. So between the shots of them, the giant warriors... And also the Ohm rampages.
Mm-hmm.
That's the rumbling.
That is the rumbling, yeah.
What's the rumbling?
The rumbling is from the final season of Attack on Titan.
Spoilers.
Mega spoilers, yeah. So I won't explain it on this podcast.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. I'm surprised you escaped the memes.
What can I say? I'm deep in JoJo.
Yep. But yeah, so the visual of them... Because I think we see a few like dead ones sort of covered in moss that people are living in and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
They're all over a bunch of video games. Is like just that imagery of living in the husks of giant dead monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Elden Ring, again, specifically, has a bunch of big giant skulls. Have you played Hyperlight Drifter, Jay?
No.
That has some sort of giant monsters, which are very much based on these.
Nice.
It even has that same imagery of like them marching through the fire and stuff. But yeah, that's such... I've always been a big fan of that whole image of like these giant sort of kaiju-like things, just so big that you can't even imagine fighting them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whether it's in like War of the Worlds or Attack on Titan or anything like that.
Or Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yes, so they've got... Everyone assumed these things were all but destroyed. But Pajit, the kingdom which was mentioned by the princess we saw die earlier, dug one up. And the Tolmekians have taken it and are trying to bring it back to life.
So they could burn the sea.
Because, yes, that's the plan.
And of course, I guess, dominate the other kingdoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those cases where like burning the Sea of Decay is the reason they can give diplomatically for why they've got it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like in World War II, right?
Mm-hmm.
America was like, oh, we're building this atom bomb to beat the Axis. Russia. look at this atom bomb we've built to beat the Axis,
right.
Russia. What do you think about that, Russia?
Yep.
So it's like, oh, look at this thing we've bought to defeat the Sea of Decay. What do you think of that, Pajit?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Look at those guys.
And that's kind of the catalyst for where the story goes next, right? Because they're going back to, is it they're going back to Tom Ecker or are they going to Pajit? Like the reason they leave the valley?
I think they're going to Pajit. But anyway, yeah, they have to go and do some diplomacy or whatever. So they drag Nausicaa away with them and start flying off in some airplanes. I think just before that, we get a little, Obaba explains the way, like, you shouldn't attack the Sea of Decay because that's what makes the Ohm go sort of go crazy. Out in force and basically destroy kingdoms.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, they start flying away over the Sea of Decay and are basically instantly set upon by insects and downed. Oh no, they're attacked by Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, it's Ashbel, what's his name?
Ashbel, yeah.
The old Ashbel. Even Stevens himself comes along on his jet plane.
So this is the brother of the character we saw die earlier.
Yes.
The princess. This is the prince, I guess, of Pajit. And he does a little surprise attack and basically shoots down most of their airships. Mm-hmm. Gets shot. Did he get shot down or does he get taken down by the bugs? I can't remember.
He gets shot down.
Yeah. He gets shot down.
And then he's attacked by the bugs.
Yeah.
Yes. And Nausicaa and the villagers and Kushana as well all kind of escape on a little jet plane that they have and have to descend into the Sea of Decay.
Just occurred to me, we skipped over a very important scene before they left the Valley of the Wind. Nausicaa's little lab under the castle.
Oh, yes, yes.
Where she's been growing plants from the Sea of Decay, but in pure water and soil. Mm-hmm. And they're not toxic at all. They're only toxic because they're absorbing toxins from the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which leads into her theories of, like, basically the final message of the film.
Exactly. And Yupa was like, what is this? What are you doing?
Yeah. Because I guess to him, he assumes those plants are toxic. It looks like she's built a ticking time bomb under her home.
Exactly. Mm.
Well, that's right, because there's been a few scenes where they've actually had to, like, trawl through their crops, like, for any sign of spores after the Tolmekian airship crash landed, right? So, like, they know, like, any sort of infection that will spread and it'll ruin.
Yeah, later on it'll turn out they missed one and they basically have to burn the whole forest.
Yeah.
Rather than risk that spore spreading.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's not extremely.
Yeah. Oh, that's what. In Interstellar, there's like a disease that's killing crops and that's why they have to leave Earth.
Really?
And yeah, the same sort of thing. Like, it's like if there's a bit of it, you just have to burn this whole field.
Oof.
Yep. The crops that Christopher Nolan actually grew for that film, like actual fields and fields of it rather than using CGI.
No way, no.
He hates using CG.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And I think they managed to like make quite a bit of money after the film was done by selling all the crops off.
They basically just farmed fields of corn.
Yeah.
They're real?
Yeah. He also faked a nuclear explosion in Oppenheimer without using any CG.
How did he do that?
Just made a really big explosion.
Yeah, that was a wild headline to read when Oppenheimer was coming out.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I didn't know he hated using CG.
Yeah, that's why he'll like flip real trucks and stuff in the Batman movies.
My God, so he actually went to space. To record Interstellar.
Yeah, he cloned Hugh Jackman multiple times.
Oh my God! Can't believe it. Wow, what a king. Anyway, sorry.
What the fucking spoiler, by the way.
For what movie?
If I don't say it, doesn't matter.
I mean, there's not many. There's only one.
Thank God,
Nolan film with Hugh Jackman in it, but sure.
Well, thank God, I don't know. So I'm
good.
X-Men 2, Mercy. X-Men 2.
Oh, thank you.
Game show.
What did he say to me?
We spoiled it in the thumbnail of a game show a couple months back. so they're shot down. This is a great scene. They've landed in like a lake in the forest.
Mm.
And obviously Nausicaa being Nausicaa is immediately like giving orders, getting her guys in an airplane, getting ready to escape.
Yeah.
And then Kushana's like, no, I have the power here, and like pulls out her gun.
Yep.
And Nausicaa's like, really?
Yeah, and just immediately it's like all her very concept of what power is mm-hmm. is not correct in this world.
Yeah.
It's like if she fires that gun, she's dead because it will bring the insects.
Mm-hmm. And of course, and she fires that gun.
You're nothing like our princess.
Yeah, that's a little bit later, but I love that. But yeah, because she comes from like a military country, right? So in her concept of power is just force.
Yeah.
If she's the one with the weapon, she's the one in power.
Yeah.
Might is right for her.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Nausicaa has actual loyalty from her people.
Yes, and Nausicaa really speak to people like you would speak to a toddler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, we can relate to that. Like, do you really think that's the best idea right now?
And it's... I have other teachers I work with who do try to, like, be strict and use force to control children, and it doesn't work.
No.
Whereas, you know, I'm just their buddy, and then they work, they behave for me.
Hey, do you think that's smart? Let's let's stop and think. Do you think that's smart? No? Okay, then maybe let's stop. What do you say, buddy? So that's Nausicaa in that scene. Do you really think it's smart to, like, shoot a gun right now, man? Come on. Look around you.
Yeah.
But that was the scene that convinced her that, like, oh, Nausicaa is somebody too. She becomes
interested in her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the internet has taken that interest in some directions.
Of course. I see it.
Yeah.
I see it. Come on.
But yeah, this leads to Kushana and the other valley people going back to the valley, and Nausicaa flying off in her little glider to check on Asbel.
Yes.
And she ends up under the Sea of Decay.
Yes, so she finds Asbel. He's fighting off some bugs. And the two of them fall through the forest floor. Mm. So, Jay, I'm assuming you have the same note as me for this scene.
Go on.
They land in Ash Lake.
Yeah. I'm like, Hidetaka Miyazaki, you must answer for this.
So this is beneath the forest floor, basically, of the...
Oh, wow.
I'm showing Mercy Ash Lake right now.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, there's like the poisoned nuclear earth above is being filtered by the plants, and it drops down here as pure water and sand.
It's fucking blight down above the Ash Lake, isn't it?
Yeah.
His what?
The poison swamp of that game.
Oh.
Yeah. So it actually, this is sort of the point that the Sea of Decay in this world, which they've been treating as like this menace that's going to destroy everything, mm-hmm. is actually Earth's way of healing the damage humans have done.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And Nausicaa is sort of the only one who's realized, oh, if we just let it finish its work, mm-hmm. we'll live in a world without all of this poison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just literally let it cook. Let them cook. Let them cook with the clap emoji.
Mm-hmm. but yes, while she and Asbel have to try and make their way back in the valley, sort of, he ends up not being that major a character, but Kushana's right-hand man, he's sort of taken lead in her absence. And I thought it was setting it up like a, oh, she has honor, but then he takes command and he's the real villain kind of story. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of just a scrub who gets wrecked instantly.
Yeah, he's just a little idiot.
Yeah, but yeah, they are kind reviving of, the
like,
giant warrior.
He talks about it like, oh, this is my big chance, you know, like... she's out the picture, I'm gonna take charge, yeah. But he doesn't really... He's a bit incompetent. a lot incompetent.
Yes. But yeah, they are now trying to revive the giant warrior. And this is our big look at the mm-hmm. horrible, pulsating super embryo with the beast inside it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of sort of waiting around at ground level. The the villagers sort of try to revolt.
Yeah,
against the Tomekians.
Well, there's a bit of a quandary where.
They need their flamethrowers to destroy the spores.
They need their flamethrowers and things to burn away the forest that we're talking about because they've been corrupted by the spores. And at this point, the right-hand man, he's like, yeah, just do it. And then the Kushana arrives and she sees the fighting and she kind of looks around and she goes, not word for word, but fucking idiots. Like, why did you give them the weapons? Come on.
Yep. Yeah, they managed to steal, I think they just steal the one tank.
Yes.
Blow up a few of the Tomekian tanks and then escape to...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I thought was a submarine, but it's apparently a spaceship from, like, the before times. And they hold themselves up in that because it's got very strong armor.
Yes.
And then Nausicaa and Asbel find themselves back in Pajit, mm-hmm. which has been destroyed not by the Tomekians, but by the Om.
Yes.
And this is when we learn that the Pajit have come up with what they think is this genius tactic for defeating their enemies.
Yeah.
Which is to deliberately enrage the Om and send them on the attack.
And Nausicaa quite rightly is like, no, that's moronic. You're going to destroy everything. But again, the Pajit, and it's, you know, kind of just showing that, well, both sides are pretty much nearly as bad as each other. They're, again, like, well, you know, the ends justify the means. We're going to wipe out the Tomekians, not thinking, not realizing they're going to destroy the Valley of the Wind in doing so.
In a Miyazaki story, I think there will never be one side who is correct if there's a war.
Yep.
Yep.
Pretty much.
Like, if you're fighting war, you're already wrong in his book, which I don't necessarily disagree with. So yeah, the Pajit and the Tomekians are both as bad as each other.
Yes.
So Nausicaa wants to go and warn her village. They're like, no, we can't let you interfere. But then the common people on the airship sort of all group together and help her escape.
Yeah, one of them does the old
switcheroo. Takes her place in prison, yeah.
Yeah, wears her clothes and kind of they swap clothes and she's able to smuggle herself out. Nausicaa is.
Which leads to Nausicaa being dressed in the blue robes of the prophecy.
Yeah. Well,
which I'd forgotten they'd even made a prophecy at the start by the time we see it.
The clothes were red, and then they become blue because of the blood of the Om.
Yeah,
gets like soaked into her clothes.
That makes sense. I was wondering about that. I was like, I could have sworn these clothes were red, but that makes sense.
Yeah, remember the baby Om?
Yeah, I remember now.
She's hugging it, and then the blood is soaking into her clothes, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
It's over there. It's there.
I mean, I guess if we want to make a little Zelda reference here, for some obscure reason, she ends up in the clothes of the character of Prophecy, which is what a lot of the later Zeldas start doing.
Yeah. Very convenient,
Yep. Oh, yeah, it's because it's the day that you celebrate your birthday, we're dressing you up in the hero's clothes. Oh, well, what do you know? You went and became the hero.
Yeah. Aw. That happens in the Wind Waker.
That's the Wind Waker, yeah.
Aww.
but yeah, so it turns out the way they drive the Om into a frenzy is just by putting a baby one on spikes and dragging it around in an airship.
Just cruel. Yeah. Just horrible. Straight up like monster behavior.
But again, it works because they're bugs, right?
Yeah.
So it's so easy to believe that people wouldn't have this sympathy for them. I listened to a podcast just like last week. Talking about, so because of the game Helldivers, Starship Troopers is in conversation again. Mm. The film Starship Troopers is a 2-hour parody of fascism. But when it released, huge portions of the American audience just took it at face value.
Oh.
I was like, oh, these guys are cool and these bugs are baddies.
And
now there's like...
You see people haven't matured, some people still see that.
Well, that's it. The sort of right-wing, you know, YouTube scum industry.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, these leftists, they're siding with the bugs. Do they hate humans this much? And it's like, dear God, where is your media literacy?
It's dead.
Yeah.
Right now, currently, in the States and in the world, it's kind
of
dead.
I've been seeing a lot of think pieces being like, oh, Dune has revived people's media literacy just by wearing its metaphor so on the sleeve. But anyway, yeah. So it's very believable to me that no matter how much sentience these bugs showed, not even as humans, we as mammals just would fail to connect with them.
I would fail to be honest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, if I see a gnome in my house, I would kill
it. Your house is flattened.
Like, come on. If I see one, I'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry. Your mom can come and destroy Tokyo.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you mentioned it briefly earlier, Jay. There's like a flashback to Nausicaa's past where she had found the baby and like befriended it.
Mm-hmm.
But the adults were like, no, it can't be allowed to stay here.
Exactly. They don't belong here.
The first time we see this flashback, we don't get the full story because it happens, I think, at the beginning of the film where she coaxes the Ohm that was chasing Yupa back into the forest. Is it not covering tendrils? Or is that after she falls into... But she definitely gets covered in tendrils.
Yeah, there's a point. She meets a peaceful Ohm who does it. I think it's when her and Asbel are still trying to escape the forest.
Yeah.
She lets herself be taken by one of the Ohm and it... Oh no, it's when the plane crashes. Because that's one of the things Kashana sees and is like, okay, she's something special.
Yeah.
Because an Ohm just shows up and she just like stands before it and lets it cover in her tentacles and like psychically bond with her.
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it leaves them in peace even though it's eating everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
With a very... initial reading was eerie. Still a bit eerie. The kind of like nursery song backing music. Of like the child singing, but we get some context on that in this follow up scene where we see that she was trying to save a baby Ohm, but it gets ripped away, and
so she manages to save this like little this one that's being used as bait.
I thought you said little ugly infant. Oh my god, I was going to say, come on.
I was going to just say infant one and then I stopped myself because it's a little bit bigger than the infant we saw earlier, so I guess it's like a child.
Yeah.
But it's very wounded. And then, the Ohm rumbling comes along. And at first it looks like she's basically killed. She's just launched out of the way and lands in the middle of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ohm, and then this is when we get to see the giant warrior in action. But it's not fully grown, so it's like this melting...
Mm-hmm.
Half dead monstrosity.
And fun fact, it's animated by Mr. Hideki Anno.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was like, this is the scene there. I was watching it and I was going, this giant warrior.
Yeah.
Like, now that is kind of like decaying and looks like this horrible half organic, half machine thing.
Yeah.
Really reminds me of an Eva.
Yep.
I wonder. And then I googled that, and of course.
It's that Evangelion monstrosity.
Yeah, there was a section on this. Me and Mercy went to a Hideki Anno museum exhibit a month or two ago. They had a section on this and like how he animated it and stuff.
Yeah,
and I think him and Miyazaki are like pals.
They're friends, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is chilling. From what I've gathered when I was reading up on it, like this kind of got him his big break. Like this was like the first time he was really noticed by the animation industry.
Mm-hmm. And it's this aesthetic, like you said, it is Eva. Shin Godzilla also has kind of that it's not quite made element
also,
to it.
I found a little behind the scenes of Nausicaa. It says that Hideki Anno, who worked on the film Nausicaa, had planned to do a manga side story centered around Kushana's military exploits.
Hmm.
But Miyazaki refused him permission, believing that Anno would only use her to play war games, quote unquote.
Yeah, he probably would have done.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have gone weird with it at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
Anno
is more willing to glorify soldiers than Miyazaki is.
Miyazaki, yeah.
Like, he tends to take the Kojima route of war is bad, but soldiers are good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty much what... All the 20-hour cutscenes in Metal Gear Solid basically boil down to that moral. And then, yeah, it does beam
the
attacks.
The cutscenes boil
very...
down to Snake had a hard life.
Yeah. But yeah, the giant warriors doing these beam attacks, which are very like Godzilla or God. I guess they're like the Guardians too. But it can only muster like two attacks before it basically melts itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing left to stop the arm.
Yeah. And like the girls, when they talk to the little, when they talk to the old lady, they're like, are we going to die? And she's like, yep.
If we die, we die.
If we die, we die. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's leave the earth.
And then, yeah. This scene, do you know what movie this reminded me of, Jay?
No.
Matrix Revolutions.
Really?
Like,
I'm trying to think.
At the end, when Neo goes to the Machine City to stop the invasion of the big bug things killing everyone, he's like, all these tentacles come out and hold him in like a Jesus pose. And then he like even lights up like she does.
What the hell?
I suppose it's...
I mean, it's what's going on is different, but the imagery is very similar. Of just he being held aloft by these tentacles that are connecting to him and then saves everyone. They have connected with Nausicaa, read her mind, realized that she doesn't actually want to hurt anyone, and they decide to spare the valley. I mean, who knows if they just turn around and go and destroy Tomekia? Who knows?
They don't. They will never do something like that because they learned forgiveness from Nausicaa.
Maybe.
Who knows? Really interesting point that I saw on this behind the scenes. But Miyazaki has described Kushana and Nausicaa as being the two sides of the same coin. But Kushana having deep physical wounds.
Yes.
So really interesting. Again, just the way Miyazaki just how do you say this in English? I forgot. How he writes stories.
Really. Yeah, he does write characters first, not
like juxtaposition.
Goody and
baddie. Yeah. I wanted to use a more poetic verb like woven, like woven. How do you say that?
Yeah, like it's like poetry.
How
it
you
rhymes.
Weave? Yeah. Did you say weave?
Yeah. How he weaves his stories.
Oh, there you go. How he weaves his stories like a little spider creature.
He weaves a good yarn.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the story of Nausicaa.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks, you really liked it.
At the moment, I would probably say it's my favorite Ghibli. You know me, I love monsters and creatures.
I know.
And monster stories and kaiju stories. And this is, you know, my favorite kind of hero is where the only reason they're a hero is because they're good at making friends with the monsters. Mm. So like Ash Ketchum or Jake Sully. You know?
Right.
So yeah, Nausicaa, like, yeah, she is a badass at fighting, but the reason she's actually the hero here is because she understands the bugs and befriends them.
Yeah.
I've only seen three Ghibli movies. So
what do you mean you've only seen three?
I've seen the two we've done for this podcast.
And?
What's the third one?
Totoro.
Okay.
Oh my god, why watch Spirited Away?
I know, there's big
go
gaps.
Go watch it. No, go literally go watch it tomorrow when you wake up.
If I wasn't going out tomorrow, I would.
Fine.
But yeah, this is my favorite of the three that I've seen easily. I mentioned this earlier on that I do feel that the story's been abridged somewhat, and like there's certain things, it obviously it still works as a film, but there's things that I wish the story had a bit more time to breathe with, like getting to know a bit more about the countries and a bit more about this kind of 7 years burning and
see
a bit more time with the characters. Like
right.
That I could see, you know, like an actual like anime episodic adaptation, like the story, I think we'd get that time to breathe. However, maybe now that I think about it and I've been saying these words out loud, maybe the art of not knowing so much lets you focus on what matters, which is...
That's what I was going to say. I maybe would like more time with the characters, but I like how the lore is just given to us in, like, a sentence.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, nothing they could show us would be as evocative as the 7 days of fire.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, because that gets your mind racing. You're like, what does that mean? Like, yeah, and I guess for people that maybe want to have everything spelled out for them, which sometimes I'm like that, it's a little frustrating not getting to know more about that.
Right.
Oh man, you're not going to enjoy some of the later Ghibli.
Yeah.
I can, you know.
It's a different kind of fantasy, whereas this one implies that there is lore you could know.
You should read the manga then.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I might look at the manga and
I wouldn't mind reading it.
Yeah, apparently what I've seen online is like way it goes super deep into Goshana's backstory. It talks more about every single country, about like whatever she went through. So it has more context. So I think it's gonna be a different watch if you read the manga first and then see the movie. There's gonna be like I see.
Yeah, in terms of. Like, the reason we did it for this podcast was because, aesthetically, the depths does kind of remind me of, like, the Sea of Decay and stuff.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, you have the whole idea of the depths is that this is where this, you know, material that's coming out that's, you know, causing people up on this overworld to wither away and, you know, lose function. You know, the whole gloom emanating from the cracks out of the depths. You know.
But in the end, story-wise, definitely Laputa ended up being more connected.
Yeah.
With the whole where they mine the material in the depths to make the Sky Kingdom and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
This one, I was more like, oh wow, this inspired so many other video games.
Yeah. If we were still recording Guess This Flask, this would have been a perfect episode for that. Because, yeah, for me, I was definitely seeing more of Elden Ring in this than Zelda.
Yeah.
And Dark Souls.
And Elden Ring, of all of the FromSoft games, it's full of references to Miyazaki and Anno. Like, the final boss is basically from Mononoke.
Ah.
Really?
As is Torrent.
Yeah.
That big... When you go to the capital and there's the dragon with that big spear through it, it's basically the Spear of Longinus from Evangelion.
That's true, but... Caroline Spear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. Miyazaki, Lauren. Not that one. Loves Miyazaki. That one.
Yes. Yeah.
There we go. So I guess at the end of this episode, I can say, do I recommend listeners of our podcast watch this film for Zelda reasons? No. For watching a film reasons? Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I concur.
It's a really good movie, guys. Please watch it.
I still think overall the idea of, like, Tears of the Kingdom's world being made of Nausicaa, Mononoke, Laputa does kind of hold up. But this one is the weakest of the three connections.
Yeah.
It has inspiration from it, but it's not, like...
Not as directly as Mononoke and Laputa.
Exactly. Or Laputa, yes. From what I've seen.
All right. Well, if you've enjoyed this podcast, we can be found on Twitter at HyruleFieldPod. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please do rate and review, like and subscribe. Tell your friends. As you're listening to this, it means we've delayed our final wrap-up episode by an additional week. So please do get in touch. Give us your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your corrections for our finale of our season on Tears of the Kingdom. And Jay, until then, do you have some sage words of advice for our listeners?
I don't have some sage words of advice, but what I do have is a request for our first question that we'll answer in the finale. So, Mercy, do you have a question for me, Luke, and Jats to answer on our finale episode of Hyrule Field Report?
About Zelda?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes. Who... Can it be just a
anything
stupid question?
Like yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Who do you think dances better? Ganon, Link, or Zelda?
I like it.
Specifically,
I know my answer
Latin
already,
rhythms.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
I'm talking merengue. Right? Who do you think dances better? There you go. Think about it. Think about it and you let me know.
Anyway, I think from this film, the sage words of advice we need are Don't kill spiders, just take them outside.
Yes. Yes.
Because they otherwise, become giant spiders.
A giant spider will break your house.
Exactly.
Oh, at work, whenever I'm seen rescuing a bug, my colleague is like, well, that's why you won't go to hell.
Aww. Shame about all the other atrocities you cause, but sure.
Sure, you killed a man, but you haven't killed a spider, so.
My 7 days of fire haven't even begun. I thought on that note, Taco Bell.
We'll catch you next time.